from our microphones in downtown Washington, D.C. This is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Today we have, I think, an extraordinarily interesting program. We're going to be talking about relapse prevention for women. Actually, relapse prevention for people who are struggling with substance abuse across the board. To talk about all of this, we have Chris Keels. She is in charge of our faith-based effort here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. We have Tasha Chambers. She is the Citywide Outreach Coordinator, one of three working again for the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. She is a facilitator and she runs groups. And we have Jennifer Gaskins. She was one time appeared on WTOP Radio, which is one of the more famous radio stations in the country. She at one time was under supervision and she comes back and mentors to women involved in a relapse prevention program. But before going on with the show, I want to remind everybody that we do appreciate very much the fact that you contact us, you follow us on Twitter, you contact us by phone, you contact us by email. You can reach me via email, Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D dot Sipes, S-I-P, not T, but P-E-S at C-S-O-S-A, or you can reach me at Twitter slash Len Sipes. And for those of you who contact us about a lack of programs in September, quite frankly, in terms of vacation and in terms of attending conferences, social media conferences, and in terms of sickness, I have not been able to produce a lot of programs. So if you're wondering where we've been, I've been out. And it's been that simple. So once again, we appreciate the fact that you are interested in the programs here at DC Public Safety, radio, television, blog, and transcripts. So we go and start off with Chris Keels. Chris, again, is in charge of the faith-based initiative for the Court Services and Offender Supervision Program. Chris, give me a sense when you're talking about relapse prevention for women. Well, first of all, give me a sense of what we mean by the faith-based initiative.
Sure, Lynn. Thank you for inviting us. And this is National Reentry Relapse Prevention Month.
So
it's a good thing that we're having this show now.
Okay.
Since this is Relapse Prevention Month.
It's timely.
Well, the Faith-Based Initiative is a program, as you know, that was put in place under our former president, President George Bush, and is now being supported by our current president. And the Faith-Based Initiative focuses on helping persons out in the community through a combination of the federal government along with faith-based institutions. So here at CSOSA, we have partnered with our faith institutions, and that means any faith institution can be a part of this program. And we work with those faith institutions in providing services for our offenders, which at that point they become called mentees. We remove the label of offender and we call them mentees.
Mm-hmm.
And the mentors who come from the local churches and synagogues and temples work with them in helping them to be able to resolve some of the barriers to reentry. And so we also work with service providers here in the city, which are nonprofit organizations who provide services as well. So it's a wonderful program. We have over 400 persons matched at this current point, meaning—
Wait a minute, 400 persons, meaning 400 people who were caught up in the criminal justice
That's
system?
That's right, matched with a mentor.
That's amazing.
Yes, we're very proud of the program.
That is amazing. 400 matched.
Yes.
With a mentor.
With a mentor.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Over what period of time?
Over the past year. Our fiscal year.
Over the last year?
October 2008.
400. That's incredible.
To September 30th. Yes.
We're People very have been working hard.
Yes. Yes.
That's probably more than all the years combined previous to that.
Yes. I'm very proud of that.
Congratulations, Chris. That's great. That's great. That's great. You know, because one of the things, this is not the first program that will have a faith-based theme to it, but one of the things that I found in the past is that not only is the faith community very dedicated to this concept, it seems to me that people, when they come out of the prison system, really need other people to surround them, guide them, help them in terms of income taxes, help them in terms of finding clothes for a job interview, help them in terms of how to conduct a job interview, help them in terms of the fact that I want to go back to heroin. I'm sorry, I'm getting sick and tired of not being employed, struggling with employed. I want to go back to drugs. I mean, to have not only that individual, but to have it in the structure of the church or the synagogue or the mosque, that becomes what another very famous person involved in the faith-based effort said some time ago. It's a gang for good. You know how offenders get caught up in gangs? Well, this is the gang for good. This is a gang of individuals who are pro-social,
That's
who are trying to do the right thing.
That's correct. As you know, Narcotics Anonymous and Alcohol Anonymous, as well as criminal justice systems, we support and encourage offenders to find new people, places, and things. Well, if you go in the Yellow Pages, you're not going to see a category that says new people, places, and things. And
so for people out of prison.
That's right. Or for anyone, for that matter. And so what we do with the Faith-Based Initiative is we go out and we pursue those relationships on behalf of reentrants and help to build those relationships, helping them find new people that who are, in fact, role models, new places where they can go for pro-social activities, and new things that help them to be able to use their creative skills.
Tasha Chambers, you're one of three citywide outreach coordinators. You're a facilitator and you run groups. Give me a sense as to what your take is on faith-based.
My take on faith-based, I think it's a one-of-a-kind program, to be honest with you. We work specifically with the faith institutions, and what you'll find is a lot of times offenders that are inside of the jails or the prisons are looking to a higher power to get them along the way. But once they come back into society, they lose that. You know,
why
get caught
is that?
Up.
Why do you embrace God in prison and come back out and suddenly God disappears?
It's kind of, you know, he's there when I need him. You know, a lot of times preachers even preach about that in churches. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll come to God when things are going bad, but you also want to praise God and thank him when things are going good. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we try and, you know, reintegrate with the client.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, this is something good to have on the outside too, because it's going to keep you from going back to prison.
You know, so many people caught up in the criminal justice system have told me that the key ingredient was their faith. Now, again, when we're talking about faith, we're a federal government organization. We're not talking about the Christian faith. We're not talking about Catholicism. We're not talking about Buddhism. We're not talking about Shintoism. We're not talking about the Muslim religion, the Jewish religion, because we don't care. What we want people to do is to participate. Mm-hmm. So we're not trying to push a particular religion on anybody, and that's one of the things that I want to make very clear from the beginning, because sometimes I'll get emails basically saying you're advocating Christianity. But for those individuals who have made that break with drugs, made that break with the lifestyle, as we call it, hanging out on the street, doing up to no good, not being employed, it was the faith community or their individual dedication to God that pulled them out of that morass.
And that's what we do with the, it's called the Order My Steps Women's Group. It's the group that I facilitate. And it is a faith-based group. We open with prayer. We end with prayer. It's a universal prayer because we understand that, you know, we can't, you know, pray to, you know, any one particular religion. But yes, we have to. We believe in integrating that piece of faith, of God, of belief in a higher power to get you through those tough times.
Which is absolutely necessary, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of the hundreds of people that I talk to. Jennifer Gaskin, star of radio, previously on WTOP radio here in Washington, D.C., one of the big radio stations in the nation's capital and throughout the country, for that matter. You used to be caught up in the lifestyle. You were at one time on supervision. You're now a mentor. You go back and talk to these young women, older women in the relapse prevention group. What do you say to them?
Well, I let them know that faith plays a big part, has played a big part for me. Not just through the rough times, but I understand that through the good times too, my higher power is what sustains me. And I let them know that it's possible. It's possible to get out of that situation, to get out of that lifestyle. It's not an easy thing. As we've said earlier, it's a day-to-day thing. But if you stand fast and you hold on to your faith and you be kind to yourself and take it one day at a time, realizing that any situation can come about that can make you relapse or would make you have the desire to relapse. But you hold on to that faith. You hold on to that conscious decision that this is what I want. This is my life. This is how I choose now to live my life, because I know that I can live my life this way without being caught up in that so-called lifestyle.
I want to go back now to a general conversation of relapse prevention. Now, in terms of the CSOSA model, Chris, what we try to do ordinarily is to assess the individual, put the person into drug treatment that deals with that particular person's issues for being involved in drug abuse, being involved in criminal behavior, and then we put them in a relapse prevention group. And so that's what we're talking about today. But you go back to this whole issue from the very beginning of talking to hundreds and hundreds of individuals who are drug addicts, who have been drug addicts, who have been alcoholics, and they tell me that every single day of their lives, it is a struggle. That once you've spent 2 years with a needle in your arm, 2 decades with a needle in your arm, that high, that lifestyle, everything that's attached to it, not just the high, but the whole, everything that's attached to it, the hanging out, the friends, the everything attached to it becomes so tempting that they've got to struggle with it on a day-to-day basis, and that's why we do relapse prevention, correct?
That's correct. And you have to keep in mind that persons who are struggling with an addiction lose a lot of contacts and relationships and support systems. And not only for women in particular do they lose all of those variables in their lives, but there are also other barriers for them. They may have lost their children in the process, and so they have to reunify with their children or reintegrate with their children. And also there may be an issue with clothing and food and somewhere to stay and transportation money. There are a lot of other variables. And so in this women's relapse prevention group called Order My Steps, one of the things that we do is develop a covenant relationship so that we can support each other. Ms. Chambers is very helpful in terms of being able to provide service providers here in the city who can help to meet some of those needs. And in our economy today, it's very hard even for the working person to be able to deal with some of the struggles that we have. But if you have a history of addiction and not the coping skills to be able to deal with trauma in one's life, then there's more of a temptation to deal with toxic relationships, to deal with things that you shouldn't have dealt with in the past.
Most of the women have kids.
That's correct.
Okay. You know, Tasha, it is, I just can't imagine this. For a male coming out of the prison system, it's hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
For a woman to come out, grab her kids from her mother, mm-hmm. or from her grandmother, reintegrate with the children, and figuring out how am I going to support these two children and myself and stay away from the bad influences and find work while that nagging of heroin or cocaine addiction, that nagging is with me every day. That's almost impossible to overcome all of those barriers to getting back on the straight and narrow.
Right. And that's why we are, what we do in our groups is we match our women with mentors. And these are women from the churches that we partner with. And these are women that come with those same situations. You know, we're all trying to keep our family together. We're all trying to keep food on the table and, you know, make sure that the kids have clothes and shoes and book bags and all these things. And so those situations we try to explain to the women are going to come one way or another. The thing is, we have to learn how to cope with them. And so the women, the clients that come to the program, they just deal with the addiction piece as well. So it's a give and take between the mentor and the client, because the mentor can show them, you know, this is how I'm coping with the things going on in my household, and let me show you the way. And at the same time, let's also show you how to stay away from those drugs, because in the end, like I said, the situations are going to come.
We had we did a conference on women offenders at one point, and Chris, I don't know if you were there at this one, but one woman got up in the crowd and basically said, you know, I had an altercation. I had a fight with a woman I live with. This happened last night. And she threatened me and my child, and I had to pull a knife. And I had to get out of there as quickly as I possibly could. So now I'm homeless. And oh, by the way, I'm still dealing with my drug addiction. Oh, and by the way, I don't have a job. Now, what are you going to do for me? So if people sometimes wonder, in terms of parole and probation agencies and in terms of trying to assist women offenders in particular, coming out of the prison system. That's the reality of what it is that we have to deal with.
That's right. It's almost like peeling back an onion. You have to peel back one layer at a time. And in that particular situation, the first layer would be housing, is to get that person stabilized and off the street so that they're not tempted to go out and meet with their friends who will then encourage them back into a drug situation. The second step would be to get them into a treatment program and give them some support and some wraparound services around them and their children. And then to suggest some alternative ways of dealing with conflict. That maybe the person could have called the police, they could have walked outside, they could have called a neighbor, other alternatives in pulling out that weapon to resolve the conflict.
I want to reintroduce everybody. Chris Keels is in charge of our faith-based initiative here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency in Washington, D.C. We're a federal agency providing parole and probation services. Tasha Chambers is one of three citywide outreach coordinators, a facilitator, and she runs groups as part of the faith-based initiative. And Jennifer Gaskins. Jennifer has appeared in other radio shows, and she used to be under supervision of my agency, and she's now mentoring the young women. Jennifer, I'm going to go straight to the heart and soul of a very, very, very difficult question. I've sat, and throughout my 40 years in the criminal justice system, I've talked with a lot of women offenders. The stories they tell are tragic, including sexual abuse at a fairly young age. I was astounded when I saw national research that said that this was not an unusual occurrence. In fact, that 67%, if I remember correctly, of women claimed a history of sexual abuse and neglect. I'm not saying 67% were sexually abused, but between that and neglect, they're coming from some really tough backgrounds. Now, is that correct or incorrect?
Well, along the journey, I've run into women that have come from that particular type of background. But astonishing, not all females have encountered that type of situation. Some of us, for example, have grown up in a stable home where there was love and tenderness and guidance and direction. But once we got a certain age, of course, we chose to go to the left as opposed to the right. So you encounter females that have, in fact, gone through that. But like I said, astonishingly, not all females that are caught up in the system, that are caught up in drug usage, come from that type of background.
Okay. But is that an issue? Because what I'm saying is this, is that when you're dealing with addiction, when you're dealing with addiction of women caught up in the criminal justice system, when we're trying to get to the heart and soul of their addiction, oftentimes that seems to be, other women have reported to me that that is the heart and soul of their addiction.
Yes, and it is. And there's a loneliness, and there's an emptiness, and there's a need. There's a desire to be loved, to be cared for. So you go to the streets. You go to the drugs for the comfort.
You go to the wrong man.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Looking for love in all the wrong places, but you're looking and you're seeking and you need this, you know, just to feel normal, just to feel comfortable within yourself because of that particular background and those things that have happened to you. And there you are. You're there. And you're stuck, and you don't know how to get out, and it winds up being a case of incarceration.
You know, Chris and I came from the Maryland system, and this was not based upon a particular study, Jennifer, but we just estimated there was a certain point where the women that we incarcerated, not had on community supervision, but were under incarceration, and somebody said we could probably safely release a third of them, probably many more than that. Who were involved with a male. The male said, run these drugs to New York or I'm going to hurt you and your kid.
Well,
and she strung out on drugs to begin with, and she feels she absolutely has no choice because of the laws, the way that they're written, and because she's transporting such a large amount of drugs, she received a good stretch in the Maryland prison system. She was not a danger to society. She was, I mean, in the terms of a rapist or a robber or a person going out and committing aggravated assault or murder, she was caught up in a system, and I'm not quite sure that a lot of people considered her a danger. We said that if she was let out and received substance abuse and received help, substance abuse therapy and received help with her children and received help with housing and put on a GPS, we could probably safely take a third of the women that we incarcerated and put them out with no negative effect on public safety.
I believe that. There's several women, well, as you said, a large number of women that aren't a danger, per se, a murderer, a robber, or whatever, to society, but have gotten caught up in a relationship. If not the transportation of the drugs, they've gotten involved with someone where they're acquired an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And having no job, you rely on that person to supply
or they're
that
holding
drug
his
for you.
Gun,
yes.
Or they're
sure.
driving him to different places. And,
right.
And, you know, being behind a wheel, driving him to an armed robbery, and somebody dies in that armed robbery, that's felony murder.
Yes.
Then that woman is now up for a murder charge.
But they get caught up because that particular person or that situation is a means to an end.
So in noting all of this, this is the thing that astounds me. I don't understand, quite frankly, how anybody who comes out of prison without money, who has two kids, who has a history of substance abuse, who has some emotional issues in terms of everything that she's been through, how does she have a chance in Hades of getting out of that situation? And then I think of the faith-based initiative.
Yes.
We in government, you know, we're very limited in terms of what it is that we can do, but somebody's got to reach that woman's soul. Mm-hmm. And we in government aren't designed nor equipped nor supposed to be reaching for anybody's soul. But that's the heart and soul of this issue, isn't it, Chris?
Yes. What the faith institutions can do is hug and cry when we can't hug and cry. As law enforcement personnel, we're expected to have a certain demeanor. And so we can't always be in the position of hugging and crying and being there to assist. But the faith community can give that. They can help to build self-esteem. They can be there to empower. And they can be there to listen and hear some of the things that perhaps we would consider another crime. But yet the faith community can listen to it and know that that's part of that person's history. It's part of the abuse that they've been involved in. And so what happens is the woman begins to trust, they begin to understand, they begin to research solutions to their problems, they become empowered to make a change in their lives.
That concept of empowerment, I mean, it seems, Tasha, almost impossible. As I said to Jennifer, it seems almost impossible for any human being to bounce back from all those negatives. How does any human being bounce back? Yet I've seen the faith community surround that individual when they're at their lowest, mm-hmm. and help that person maintain a sense of dignity and help that person see a future. I'm not quite sure how that woman even sees a future. And yet there are three or four people in the faith community who said, I will show you how to create that future for yourself.
Nothing is impossible with God. And that's what we tell the ladies. There's nothing impossible with God. And so just like as we latch to these men that, you know, sometimes drive us into these situations and get us locked up and get us in all of this trouble, we have to latch on to God the same way. We have to look to him like he's our boyfriend or he's our husband, and we can move that way. So we start there first with God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a belief in a higher power and faith the size of a mustard seed, you can move mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And so from then on, we do the works as well. We get them invite them to attend the churches or the mosques or the synagogues.
But that's not necessary, right?
It's not necessary.
Okay. No. I just want to be sure were
not
federal agencies.
Invite.
No, I'm serious about this because people will write and say, you're promoting religion. No, we're the federal government. We're not promoting religion. I'm serious.
Right.
And so I'm seriously asking you that question. We don't promote.
No, we don't.
So when we invite to church, that is an optional
invite.
It is
completely optional for the client.
Okay.
And if they're not comfortable attending the church or they're not ready for that yet, we have a whole list of service providers.
Right.
Whether they're at a community-based agency or they're at the church. So we can plug them into a lot of different programs, a lot of different services. They have a mentor that they're working with one-on-one. A lot of times CSOs, they have 50 to 60 caseloads. So
and those CSOs are the parole and what most people call parole and probation agents. That's what we call them here in the city of Washington, community supervision officers.
Correct.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Correct. And so they some clients need that more one-on-one, you know, to get them through those times. So they have mentors. They have myself as an outreach coordinator. They have Ms. Kills. They have Jennifer. They have all of these individuals to help them along the way. And at the same time, hopefully they have faith in God to get them through.
Mm-hmm. And if they want to join the Catholic Church, if they want to go to service at that mosque, that's up to them.
It's completely up to them.
But at the same time, I want to shift back and say it is also equally true that, again, I have seen three and four people from the faith community work with that individual, talk to that individual over the course of a half an hour, and it is intense. Mm-hmm. It is extraordinarily intense. It is. If we could record it, people would have a sense as to a human being who is alone, who is responsible for, generally speaking, a couple other human beings, i.e. children, basically saying, I can't do this. I cannot shake my addiction. I can't get a job. I can't live on my own. I can't do this. And 6 months later, she is doing it.
We just had a group, matter of fact, on Tuesday night, and we talked about changing our way of thinking. Things that we see are not always how they are. But because we're so used to thinking things and seeing things a certain way, it's hard for us to get into another gear. And so we did talk about that. The I can't. Why can't you do this? What's stopping you? What are those barriers that you're seeing that we're not seeing? Because honestly, we see that you can get through this. And the matter is, if you want to get through this, you have a want and a need to get through this, then you can. But it really is the free will of the client. We can be there as a shoulder to lean on, as a resource, et cetera. But it's really up to the client if they want to change.
It really is. I mean, one of the things, Jennifer, that I've heard from people caught up in the criminal justice system so many times is that it is a very personal decision. And until you make that very personal decision, we in the criminal justice system cannot drag you into conformity. That your willingness to go to drug treatment, your willingness to find work, your willingness to support your kids, your willingness not to commit crime, your willingness not to do drugs is we can't force that upon anybody. That first, it must be that personal decision.
It must be a conscious decision that you make within yourself that this is what I want. And I'm doing it for self. I'm not doing it for my mother. I'm not doing it for my children. I'm not doing it for my father. I'm not doing it for my pastor. I am doing this for myself because it's, in fact, your life that you're talking about. And once you get to that point where I want this, this is what I really want.
We only have about another minute and a half left in the program. How does a person get to that point? How many times have people told me they were sick and tired of being sick and tired? They were sick and tired of going to jail, sick and tired of substance abuse, sick and tired of being strung out, sick and tired of the family not trusting them. But does it have to be that dire? Does it have to be after, you know, you've been in this, caught up in the system for years and years? I mean, can that happen when you're 20? Can that happen when you're 17? Can that happen when you're 25?
There's no age limit. I think everybody has to reach what is their bottom, and everybody's bottom is different, be it the loss of your children, a job, your home. Everybody's bottom is different. But I think once you get there, and we pray that it doesn't have to be something so devastating to get you caught up in the system.
But it often is.
And it often is. And the reality is that's when we come into play.
Okay.
That's when the mentors, the faith-based, that's when we let them know we believe in you, but we want you to also believe in yourself.
Right.
And once a person sees that, hey, I'm worth believing in, then they start grasping that concept, I am worth believing in. I am worth being cared about. And it just takes hold.
You know, it's sort of like the Angels of Mercy. There's an order in Catholicism, I think, called the Sisters of Mercy. So you guys end up being the Angels of Mercy. We got to close out the program. First of all, I want to invite the three of you back whenever you want, or to bring the people who you're dealing with and let them come back and tell their stories. Because this is just an amazing transformation. I'm so enthused about what I see in regarding the faith-based community. That's because after 40 years in the criminal justice system, I've gotten rather cynical. And I see optimism with the faith-based community rather than the cynicism that I see from my fellow members of the criminal justice system who have been around for a while. At our microphones today is Chris Gills, in charge of the faith-based program for the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. 400 people this year, Chris. That's a wonderful, wonderful accomplishment. 400 people who have been mentored too in terms of the faith-based community. Go ahead.
My goal by June of 2010 is to have 200 faith institutions signed on to this program. So if you're listening in the D.C. metropolitan area, please give us a call or email me, and we would love to have you become a part of our program.
What's the number, Chris?
You can reach me at 202-345-4494.
And what I'll do is I'll put up that telephone number on the show notes and also put in Chris's email address. That's 202-345-4495, 202-345-4495. Tasha Chambers,
what
4494. Okay, now I have to say that over again. 4494, 202-345-4494, 202-345-4494. And we'll put the telephone number up in the show notes. Tasha Chambers, one of three citywide coordinators and the person who runs and facilitates groups, thank you very much for being with us. Jennifer Gaskins, star of WTOP Radio, and thank you very much for coming back
thank
and volunteering to have at these young women who are struggling with their lives. Ladies and gentlemen, this is D.C. Public Safety. Again, we really appreciate the fact that you're contacting us. Let us know how you feel about the show, suggestions, or criticisms for that matter. You can reach me at Leonard, LEONARD.Sipes, SIPES, @CSOSA.gov. Please have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.